This is Andy Baggerly, KNBR Insider from the Bay Area News Group. Now back to Giants pregame with Marty Lurie.
Well, that's a great introduction for Extra Bags. Follow him on Twitter with two G's. Andy Baggerly in Colorado. Extra Bags, how are you today?
Marty, I am great. I am awesome. How are you?
Well, I thought about you today because, you know, we did follow your alma mater, and George Contos has been tweeting. You have as well. And it does affect the Bay Area here, so we're not just talking about Northwestern. But they beat Stanford today. How'd you like that?
Well, you know, it was pretty evident from the first, after Stanford's first drive, they were sort of just moving it down in chunks, you know, 7, 8, 9 yard rushes. And I thought, well, this is going to be the way it's going to be. I mean, that's what Stanford is. They're big up front. They're physical. You know, I didn't think that Northwestern would be near as physical. And Northwestern starting a freshman quarterback for making his first start, I thought, well, it's going to be a tough task for him to stretch the field. So, you know, I was irrationally optimistic, I guess is the best thing you could say. And then just you watch more and more of that game, and it was clear that Northwestern was coming off blocks better. And, you know, it got to be tremendously disappointing for Stanford. I mean, they were thinking, hey, you know, we could sneak our way into being a national title contender, maybe get into that playoff at the end. But, it was a tough wake-up call for them, I think, with the 11 a.m. kick in the central time zone. And you know, Northwestern was really banged up last year, and they got some talent in their program. So now, of course, I'm super excited for this season.
Well, who are more irrational, baseball fans or alma mater college football fans?
Well, you know what the thing is, though, if you watch the Giants at times over their three title seasons, you'd think there's no way this team could possibly win a World Series. So sometimes irrational optimism ends up paying off. And if we didn't have it, well, then, you know, only Ohio State fans would be watching college football, and only Royals and Dodger fans would be watching baseball right now. Hopefully some people are still watching the Giants today because they still got a lot to play for.
Yeah, well, you've been with the club. Obviously, we talked last Saturday and Sunday after the Cardinal games or before the Cardinal games, and then you're on the trip to L.A. for those three gut-wrenching games, and now the first two here, kind of on the opposite end of the excitement scale. You've been with them for the seven losses. What? How do you feel about it? What do you see?
Well, you know, it's I go back to something that I read on I'm sure you read McCovey Chronicles, and Grant Brisby, who's just a fantastic writer, does a great job opining about the team. And he basically wrote something after the Kershaw game, you know, where there were more swings and misses than any game, basically, that they can chart with the data going back by a major league pitcher. 15 Ks, the most against the Giants since Nolan Ryan in 87. Just a dominant performance, and yet, you know, the Giants were a hit away from winning that game and lost 3 one-run games in L.A. And you look at all the flaws in this team, and basically his point was the Giants really had no business. Well, how are they even that close? And then you look at it and pull back the lens on the whole season. How have they really kept it this close with Pence out, with Panic out, with Crawford out for a chunk here recently, with losing two starting pitchers basically on opening day, Bruce Bochy announcing to us that Matt Cain and Jake Peavy wouldn't be ready to go, never really seeing Cain at all this season, the Matt Cain that we know, and then obviously Lincecum going down to surgery, and not that you expected him to be a Cy Young again, but getting very little out of him after the first 6 or 8 starts. So it's just they've had to scrap to try to get through a game when their starter only has enough stuff to get through 5 innings or to get through a series when they've been missing so many key personnel and have to run everybody else into the ground. And I think that all just has really caught up with them. And now they've got a portion of their schedule where they're finally playing teams that don't have a winning record, and you find out that they just don't have any energy left, and they don't have enough healthy bodies. And it's, as they say, crazier things have happened, and they do have games left with L.A. at home. But, not only is time not on their side, but everything else seems to be against them too.
Well, the losses, you have to win some games. Every loss pushes you further back in that loss column, and, you know, really – if they could get to within 4 losses of the Dodgers or 5 losses of the Dodgers going into that last week, it would be great because they're at 8 now. I mean, it doesn't take a lot, really. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot in 16 games to get you back to that. Not to overtake them, but just get you back to where it's interesting. And they just can't get that step taken. So I think that's the goal for me. If I'm a Giants, to just win some games and make it interesting. And someone's got to do well to win some games, and that's the thing. Somebody's got to step up, and I'm just not sure who.
Yeah. I don't know either. You know, I thought it was a big moment in yesterday's game, of course. Chris Heston had a really, really nice start at Coors Field, a place where he'd just gotten knocked around really badly twice and obviously is probably dealing with some confidence issues after struggling as much as he has in the last month and a half. And I thought he really came back after giving up those two homers and pitched very well, which is a good sign for the Giants both in the long term and short term. But you can't lose 2-1 at Coors Field on, you know, a warm, breezy night like that. There was a big moment in the sixth inning. They got a run in on Angel Pagan's hit and then had two on for Buster after Brandon Belt struck out. That was the first one, Belt not making contact. And then you think, okay, this is a Buster moment. Yeah. This is where, you know, he comes through and he rises to the occasion. And, you know, what happens? He gets plunked in the back and with a pitch. And then it's not Hunter Pence who's hitting behind Posey, it's Marlon Byrd, and yeah, Marlon definitely helped them win a couple games, but, you know, he strikes out on four pitches, and there you go. That was really their only chance. And over the last 17 games since Pence got hurt and went out, they've got 7 homers.
Yeah.
Byrd has 3 of them, and you want to guess who's hit the other 4?
Well, I wrote it down, so I'll let you say it. Go ahead.
Kelby Tomlinson, Nori Aoki, Ryan Vogelsong, and everyone's favorite slugging pitcher, Madison Bumgarner.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, it really is. And not to say that power is the only way you can win a game, but sometimes you do have to win with power, and it just has not been an option on the table for them for, you know, going on 3 weeks now.
No, good analysis. Andy Baggerly with us. Andy, I thought of you this week. Tim Lincecum, you know, I at least I got the subject out there. Whether him, and he got all sorts of reactions all over the place, so I'm happy I got the subject out there. But it made me think, I still think, he's pitched his last game as a Giant. I still think that. But maybe think of the book, Giant Splash, you know, with the amazing moments that this guy has given the ball club. You wrote about him in the book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think if, you know, like you said, the book is really the greatest hits at AT&T Park in 15 years. So each chapter you can read unto itself, you know, whether it's JT Snow scooping up Darren Baker at home plate game or Jonathan Sanchez's no-hitter or Tim Lincecum in the NLDS striking out 14 and beating the Braves 1-0, which is still the best pitched game I think I've ever seen by a Giant in the time I've covered him. You know, it's so much of it is still, even though the chapters are separate, you sort of get the organizational arc, and definitely the ballpark being the main character and the backup, the background for all of these. And I noticed in this book, just how
we're
positioning.
You're cutting in and out. Are you you walking?
Nope, I'm sitting right in one spot.
Oh, good. Okay, you're back. Yeah, now you're back. Go ahead. So finish that thought about the book.
So you know, you get out of the Bonds years, and really there was quite a lot of malaise and 4 losing seasons in a row and not a whole lot of reasons for fans to get excited. And Lincecum made baseball exciting again at that ballpark and obviously opened up a new window. Everyone talked about the Bonds window, winning the Bonds window. Well, they didn't. But Lincecum opened up a new window with led by their pitching staff, and lo and behold, they've got 3 World Series titles. And he was obviously very critical as a starter in one, as a reliever in another, and really just helping to elevate that franchise even before. Because, hey, without Lincecum winning a Cy Young in 2009, mm-hmm. maybe the Giants don't even finish 500, and maybe Bill Newcomb, who's new on the job at that point, fires Bruce Bochy and Brian Sabian, and none of this stuff is happening, I mean, that we've seen. So definitely if you want to catch up on Lincecum and some of his great moments and really sort of his place in franchise lore, an important place, then the book would be a great place to start.
Yeah, I love it. We have it on the coffee table at home. Giant Splash, Andy Baggerly wrote it. You know, it's funny you said that about Brian Sabian and Bochy. That was those were some of the rumors around that period of time. That, you know, Sabian and Bochy were in hot water if this thing didn't turn around.
Oh, I think without a doubt. I mean, you went from Peter McGowan, who was very intensely loyal to Brian, and to Bill Newcomb, who was very much a wild card, a guy who came in with that Microsoft meritocracy type of attitude and, you know, go out and get the best and brightest. And I really thought that he might go out and try to find, you know, the next Theo Epstein or you know, go out and try to find the smartest GM he could find, you know, a Paul DePodesta type. But I give Newcomb a lot of credit for this. He's a really smart guy, but he was smart enough to know what he didn't know, and year to listen and to learn and to see if there was incremental improvement. And there was. In 2009, they had a winning season, did not make the playoffs, obviously. But that's what allowed Bochy and Sabian to hang on to their jobs, and obviously they're pretty much bulletproof now.
Andy, I said today on the show, and I'll just ask you the question, anybody have to show anything in September to the Giants on the ball club? They've got to do a lot of evaluations. And look, the starting rotation, you don't want to get stuck where you got stuck this year. And I think the evaluations right now are the key for the Giants. Anybody in particular that you want that you think has to show something? Maybe Matt Cain, just coming back to show he could throw five innings without trouble. Anyone on your list?
Yeah, I think that Cain would be a good place to start because, you know, you want to find out what you have with him. But I also think that you almost just write off this year, no matter what you see from him, whether it's good or bad. You almost just write it off, and he's under contract, he's coming back, and you hope he can reestablish himself. But I don't think they're going to make decisions one way or the other on the rotation based on how Cain looks in a few relief appearances here over the next couple of weeks. I think Heston is probably more important to see if he can get through September and show the durability to do that, because durability from the rotation has been an issue all season outside of Madison Bumgarner, which it's funny, he was the one guy everyone was worried about. Also Jake Peavy, I think how he gets to the finish and if he's able to find a way to get a lineup out the third time through, which has really, really been a struggle for him. I think about 60 at-bats he's faced batters the third time through, and seven of the nine home runs he's allowed have come the third time through. So that really has been a challenge for him. But you know what? You're right. They can't just bring back all the guys like they did this year to pop together the rotation, thinking, well, if we at least have eight of them, then, you know, some of them will sort themselves out and one of the other guys for long relief to cover the other guys. It just didn't work. It wasn't a good way to put together a rotation. And, I think we'll be saying goodbye to Ryan Vogelsong probably. We can't forget a lot of his contributions as a Giant. And if Flynn's going to come back, and I think the fact he had surgery does enhance the chances that the Giants could bring him back. It'll be, it won't be the money that's going to be the biggest bridge to cross. It's going to be, he wants to be Lincecum again, and he wants to reestablish himself, and he probably wants a guarantee that he is himself. He's got a chance to pitch every fifth day, and I don't know if the Giants can do that. I mean, they can't just sign and make sure they have four starters in a slot for Timmy if it works out.
Yeah.
So as long as they can figure that out, I think that there's a decent chance that that Lincecum could try to reinvent himself in a Giants uniform again.
Wow, boy, that would be something. That would be a story. All right, Andy, thank you so much. Enjoy the afternoon or the early evening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Marty. Go Cats.
All right. And he means Northwestern, the Wildcats. They did have a win today. All right, great having Andy on. He'll join us again tomorrow to talk about the game today. The